TV party, all right.
Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. This year marks the 50th anniversary of Scooby-Doo, which I am the right age to have watched it in its first run. And I watched it all the time. So we're going to talk about Scooby-Doo. We got some fun facts about Scooby-Doo. Some of the weirdest Scooby-Doo guest stars. And then that's going to get us into some of the best TV cartoons of all time. And maybe we'll reminisce about what we used to watch on Saturday mornings. That's all coming up. Again, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk, text, and Triple Play Thursday requests. Yes. All right. So, it is time for our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Make sure you've got a lot to talk about here. The new fall shows begin next week. The Emmys are this weekend, so we got to cover that. And he's done some reviews of some new shows as well. So let's get right to it because it's going to be busy. Here's Dan on WGN. Hey, Dan.
How you doing, Nick?
All right, sir. How are you?
I'm good. All I want to do, though, now is talk about the time that Scooby-Doo met Mama Cass.
Ah, yes. We're going to get to that. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, they had some crazy guest stars on that show back in the day. So it's going to be...
I have to tell you, there are whole generational guest stars who I only know really and truly because they interacted with Scooby-Doo, not because of anything they did actually in the real world.
That's awesome. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who have the same experience. So that's going to be fun. It's fun to talk about that a little bit later on. Are you looking forward to the Emmys?
I'm curious. Yeah. Either it's going to be exactly what we thought it was going to be 5 months ago, and it's just going to be a re-coronation for Veep and Game of Thrones, and that's just going to be what it is, or else some really fun, wacky stuff could happen. And if it just ends up being what we thought it was going to be in the first place, it's going to be a huge bore, and I don't see how it could possibly be a good show.
Yeah.
But if a couple surprising winners sneak in and a couple major upsets brew, it could be a fun night. So I'm rooting for upsets.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We're going to cover that a little bit later on. Before we jump into some reviews that you've done and talk about some of the new fall shows, this whole story about SNL hiring Shane Gillis and then firing him because these racist and homophobic slurs in a podcast popped up. And this is just such a weird story. What's your take on it?
Well, first of all, I mean, do you know him? Because I know you're a comedy guy. So do you know his work? Okay.
Not familiar. I did see, I mean, when the podcast and the videos and stuff, you know, leaked a few days ago, of course, I watched those. But that, you know, and I didn't find it particularly funny. So, yeah.
I would even go so far as to say that might be a minor understatement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, here's where it all gets confusing for me. The guy did not have the background that an SNL new performer tends to have. He's not a improv sketch comedy guy. He's a stand-up guy, and he does this podcast. So he comes from a different background to begin with. He has no acting credits at all. So basically, they were taking a leap on him. And at that point, you have to go, okay, what were they basing that leap upon? Well, apparently no one listened to the podcast he does, which has had over 100 episodes, so that was a major myth.
Yeah.
Apparently no one paid any attention to the fact that apparently at least one major Philadelphia comedy shop just stopped having him on anymore because they thought his material was too something or other. You know, yeah. They simply said his material is not something we want to be associated with. So, okay. What due diligence did Lorne Michael and his people do? What did they think they were bringing in?
Yeah,
so
that's
boggles my mind.
No, it makes no sense. I don't understand how he could. I don't understand how he got hired. I mean, how do you just hire someone if you don't do the homework? I mean, did he come in and he auditioned and he killed and that was it? I mean,
that's the impression I've gotten, is that he came in and basically did some percentage of his stand-up and people thought he was funny. Well, okay, but is that really all that you do? Do you not ask people in your comedy sphere, have you seen this guy? Would he be a good match for our sensibility? Does he fit?
Yeah.
And if they said that he fit, boy, Lorne Michaels wants to think about what that means if people suggested that this guy and his material fit. Because, yeah, I mean, the stuff on that podcast, and there was a lot of it, and there's no putting it in any context other than exactly what it is, which is straight up, genuinely old school, genuinely retrograde, genuinely lame. I mean, for heaven's sakes, they're making MSG jokes. What year is this?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the part that boggles my mind, is that I just don't understand what they possibly could have thought was going to happen other than exactly this.
Now, since they hired three people before the season begins in 2 weeks, are they going to replace this guy? Are they going to get a new hire, or are they just going to go with two?
I think they don't necessarily need another new hire. If you think about it, they have new hires from past seasons who they've barely used. The African-American woman who they hired last year was basically in like two or three sketches.
Ego Nuom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and she was funny in the couple things that she did. So, like, let's see if she's good. Why the heck not? You know, give the people who are there and maybe haven't had the chance a chance to do something. I mean, Bowen Yang has been a part of the writing staff, so they should know what he does.
Right.
So he should be one of those people who they can just start plugging in immediately.
Yeah.
Well, good, if they can do that, you know, those are the best people.
So. It's also astonishing that it took 45 years for an Asian performer to be cast on Saturday Night Live. That's just, I mean, I guess I didn't even realize that until I read that fact and I went, wow. So...
Well, it becomes a little bit of sort of angels dancing on the head of a pin because Rob Schneider is half Filipino.
Oh, right, so right, right.
He counts on, you know, it's like, okay, and he counts. You know, let's not say he doesn't count, but even if you count him, it's an embarrassing tracker. Like the number of different levels on which SNL has embarrassingly feeble, weak track records when it comes to anybody other than white men and often white women, it's a thing. And so, great. I hope he's really good. I feel very bad that his ascension into the cast has been overshadowed or so totally tied to, this xenophobic clown who was just a miss. And I don't know if SNL is supposed to address it in 2 weeks, if they're supposed to make a joke about it, if they're supposed to, like, you know, make a joke about, I don't know, whoever the person was in Trump's team who had a short tenure most recently and say, well, at least it was longer than Shane Gillis, you know, because for heaven's sakes, Shane Gillis made it, I think, less than half of a Scaramucci. So, you know, there are jokes you could make which would at least acknowledge it, and maybe they should do something like that, but...
Yeah.
It's an ugly look.
My main question is, like, if it gets down to one person who hired him, I mean, that person has got to be in for a crap storm. I mean, it's just crazy.
I think the rule in these cases is always that Lorne is the last man in the line, and so he has to be the person who does or doesn't sign off on people, and if he's not, then that requires a full readjustment of how we all look at Saturday Night Live. You know, if he's not the last and be all and end all, who is? Because there's never been anyone else, so it's got to be him. I don't know. And in this day and age, where really stuff is not impossible to find, you just have to put in a little effort.
Yeah.
If you have Lorne Michaels and he has a staff of 10 people, and he definitely does, they should probably have spent an afternoon, each of them listening to 5 hours of this guy's podcast.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I mean, seriously, it's inexcusable that this happened. It really is. It is. And I also think that this Gillis guy, his Twitter response, what a smartass. He's like, I'm honestly grateful for the opportunity. I was funny enough to prove myself at SNL, but I was always a mad TV guy anyway. What a jackass.
Well, and the other thing was even worse. The the happy to apologize to anyone who's actually offended by anything I said.
Yeah.
And this is the thing also that was true with Kevin Hart and the Oscar thing, where his initial reaction was that stupid Instagram post where he basically rolled out of bed and said he wasn't going to apologize. And then 2 weeks later, he went on Ellen DeGeneres,
right,
did a full explanation and apology. If he'd just done that in the first place, he would have hosted the Oscars last year.
Yep.
It's the same thing here. All he had to do was say, okay, I understand why people are offended. This does not reflect me as a person. It does not reflect my comedy, and I will endeavor to prove that I am a better comic than this going forward. And people would have gone, okay, they probably would have called him the racist guy, but I bet you he would still be on SNL today if he'd done, you know, if he'd put any effort into it.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Dan, thanks. Hang on a second, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. Lots to talk about. It's the Emmys are coming up this weekend. We're going to cover those major categories. And lots of new TV shows for review that Dan has written about. And, of course, the new fall season kicks in next week. All that and more, but we'll take a break for the news right here on 720 WGN. Wow, kick out. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And it's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. He's TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And lots of TV stuff to talk about, and let's get back to it. And here's Dan. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, I have not started watching it yet, and I emphasize the word yet, but tell me what you thought of Unbelievable and tell everybody what it is, because I cannot wait. I really seriously can't wait to see it.
No, it is very good, and I've really appreciated the number of people who I've heard talking about it, because it's a tough sell. It is based on, first of all, it is a Netflix miniseries, 8 episodes, and it is based on a Pulitzer Prize winning author that was published by ProPublica and the Marshall Project. And it is the story of basically a couple detectives who were following on the trail of a series of rapes and sexual assaults in Colorado and Washington, mm-hmm, about a decade ago. And the series starts with an episode which is almost entirely focused on a young woman played by the great Caitlin Dever from Justified and Booksmart. And she's sexually assaulted, and the cops basically don't listen to her. They don't believe her. They take the information from her in the most uncomfortable and awkward and unempathetic ways, and it just shows the way that the system doesn't work sometimes and why the system can't work. So then subsequent episodes are mostly about these two detectives played by Toni Collette and Merritt Weaver, who are both absolutely wonderful, trying to put together the pieces of these cases that for some reason have slipped through the cracks. Why have they slipped through the cracks, and what is the system not doing right? And it is tough to watch at times. It is consistently infuriating and, you know, heartbreaking. But because these two cops are so well-written and so perfectly inhabited by these two just wonderful actresses who really collectively very rarely go wrong, it is not as much of a slog as I think it inevitably sounds if you tell people about it.
Right.
And it just pulls you along. It is not overlong. So again, 8 episodes, most of them are in the 45-minute range, and it just moves extremely well. It was created by Susanna Grant and Alette Waldman and Michael Chabon. First couple episodes were directed by Lisa Cholodenko. Mm. Susanna Grant directed the last three. Michael Dinner directed a couple in between. And it just moves really well. I didn't love the 8th episode, which to me ties things together maybe a little neatly, but at certain points, but it just moves much better than you might worry that it will. And the performances are so great. And you start with Mara Weaver and Toni Collette and Caitlin Dever, who will all be in the Emmy conversation for sure next year at this time. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing the number of character actors who you know and love who just pop up briefly, because why not? You know, whether it's Dale Dickey, who is wonderfully memorable, or Anna Lee Ashford has great material, Brett Sexton, just a bunch of great character actors just keep popping up. They're all fantastic, and it's a really good, solid show, and it does a lot of smart things well.
Yeah, I'm so excited to watch it. I mean, like the Toni Collette, Merritt Weaver, I mean, my God, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. And Caitlin Dever is incredible as well. Yeah. And of course, the people who were responsible for the show have a great track record. The directors are all good. And so I can't wait to see it. I saw Toni Collette on Colbert last week talking about it, and they showed a clip, and I got very excited about it, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm going to start.
It's good. It is a tough show to get people excited about. So the fact that you're excited about it, Toni Collette helps, obviously, as I know that you are a fan.
Yes.
Some people inevitably are going to hear the subject matter and feel that it's not a thing they're prepared to get into. And the first episode is easily the hardest to watch. But it's worth sticking with, and again, only 8 episodes, and frankly, you know, this is all true, and that's good. I would watch an ongoing fictional series about these two detectives going forward. I don't know if that would necessarily be ethical or anything like that.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But I would happily watch almost anything that Mara Weaver and Toni Collette would do, and seeing them work together this well, I hope someone gives them other things to do in the future together.
Right. Okay. Very, very cool. That's on Netflix, and it's streaming now. So, all right, there we go. Since the last time we spoke, Dan, is it possible for you to talk about some of the new fall shows that you've seen more than one episode of?
Mostly I'm still in the only one episode, but if you want to toss things out, I can definitely give some reactions, because I've definitely seen finished versions of pilots.
Okay.
So what are you curious about?
Well, I mean, obviously every time we talk about this, the one show, the one network show that I'm really, really curious about is Evil, and have you only seen just the one episode of it?
I've only seen one, though. They finally have now put up, I believe, 4, and that is... if you do what I do, that is a sign of confidence on their part. I hope that it is earned confidence, because, 4 episodes for a show premiering in the fall is way more than we usually tend to get. So I am hopeful. And even short term, as I think I've said before, Mike Coulter is good. Katja Herbers is good. It is a good cast. It's an interesting premise. The Kings, Robert and Michelle, who are the creators, are good, talented people. I have hopes for it. I would like for it to be good very much.
And again, I'm the ones that are stuck in my head right now are because first of all, last night I'm fresh from watching Big Brother, and so they show 15,000 commercials for the new CBS shows. Have you seen The Unicorn?
I have seen The Unicorn. What I would say about The Unicorn, and I have 2 episodes of that of which I've seen one, what I'm going to say is the elements are there. It could become a good show. The pilot is a lot of fairly easy jokes, but when you look at the supporting cast, when you look at someone like Michaela Watkins, when you look at someone like Rob Corddry,
right,
it's a really good supporting cast. I think that it's a good and different role for Walton Goggins. And somewhat surprisingly, because it's a thing that ABC does spectacularly well, but that maybe CBS doesn't do as well, the kids who play his daughters are really good. And that's kind of a surprise in a show like this, and it's kind of important because it's about a widower basically raising his 2 teenage or nearly teenage daughters by himself and not having a clue what to do,
right?
As he's also getting back into the dating pool. I think that it could work. The pilot is not really very funny at all. I would even go so far as to say it's just not funny, but it's not like excruciatingly unfunny. It's just a okay, that's fine. Yeah, sure, why not? Okay, yeah. And then it's over. I can see how it could be good. I would like for it to be good. Not sure yet.
Walton Goggins is not a guy that comes to mind for a half-hour network sitcom. He's not the first guy that you would cast. And I just think it's interesting casting. And he's also on that Danny McBride thing being funny. So,
which he's fantastic on that he is chewing up the scenery and being utterly insane. Have you started watching that one?
No, I haven't, because you know I can't stand Danny McBride. And you know, the last time we talked, you said, "Well, listen, if this is Danny McBride doing all the Danny McBride stuff," so I'd have a hard time getting over it. But I like the rest of the cast is the problem, because you know, obviously John Goodman is great, and I love Walton Goggins.
Yeah, I mean, like, I wish I could tell you. You know, it's not like those shows. It is. I think I prefer it to some of them, and so maybe that's some sign. The episode that aired this past week was, I think, the fourth, the fifth, whichever one the flashback episode was, which focused heavily on Walton Goggins' character, on the character played by Jennifer Nettles, etc. I thought that was a super episode. So
okay, I mean, it couldn't hurt to give it a shot. I mean, you know, hey,
probably not.
before we break, I completely forgot. This is how much I don't care. I completely forgot that American Horror Story 1984 debuted last night, because I just, you know, I usually last maybe two episodes before I turn the season off. Have you seen the latest?
I have not. It is sitting on my DVR, and as soon as we are done conversing, I will probably watch it and decide if I have anything to say about it for the purposes of reviewing. But yeah. It was not sent out to critics, which is not a bad sign with American Horror Story. Sometimes they simply don't. Yeah. So
it's funny, because when I came in, Tom and I both had the same reaction. Like, Tom's like, "Yeah, I'll watch it when I get home." See, you know, and it's like the same thing for me. It's like, "Yeah, I'll watch it, you know, probably tomorrow or something."
And that was my response as well.
Yeah.
No one is feeling any urgency about this one, and they haven't promoted it in a way that makes me urgent. You know, it's been a kind of lackadaisical, okay, see, it's a kind of 80s pastiche, fine, watch it if you
want.
But, you know,
yeah.
I will.
Okay. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is here. We got a lot more TV to talk about, including a preview and some predictions, maybe, about this weekend, Sunday night. The Emmys will be handed out, so we'll talk about that as well. You can follow Dan. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, let's break, and we'll come back with more TV talk after this. Hi. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Celebrating 50 years of Scooby-Doo this morning. We're going to talk about that, some of the weirdest Scooby-Doo guests, and we'll bust into some of our favorite and greatest TV cartoons of all time. And some of our Saturday morning memories right here on 720 WGN. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Right now, we are talking with Dan Feinberg. He joins us biweekly, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and a lot of TV to get back to. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Hey, so you did a couple of reviews that were part of the Toronto International Film Festival. And I wanted to get to a couple of those. Like, first, tell me about Limetown.
Yes, Limetown is on Facebook Watch, or will be on Facebook Watch in October. Mm-hmm. It is their latest original series that you probably won't be aware is happening. And I will continue to tell people over and over again that Sorry for Your Loss on Facebook Watch is a great show that people should be watching. But you know, it's on Facebook to actually promote their programs.
Right.
Not me. Limetown will have some advantage because it is based on a fairly popular scripted podcast. And it is a sort of conspiracy thriller about a woman played by Jessica Biel here, who is a radio storyteller, and she is trying to build out a story about the disappearance of a 300 plus person, basically company factory town in Tennessee, basically a scientific research facility that was researching mysterious things that simply vanished in Tennessee back 15 years ago. And she is intrigued by it because her uncle, played by Stanley Tucci here, was one of the disappeared. And so she's just trying to get to the bottom of it. And the podcast is very spare. It's kind of a, she is beginning to interview people and find out the truth about what happened in Limetown. And somewhat unfortunately, the series is also fairly spare. I feel like we are still in the very earliest stages of people figuring out how to adapt podcasts for TV. People know that they want to do it, but they aren't necessarily sure how. Homecoming did a fairly good job, in large part because with Sam Esmail directing, it had a very distinct visual stamp that went above and beyond,
right?
You know, an audio art form.
Right.
And this doesn't really have that. It's sort of murky and bleak, and there's no question that Jessica Biel is intense, and she's doing a convincing job of that, and that Stanley Tucci, who probably in the first two episodes that I've seen appears for maybe a minute, only 45 seconds. It's very much a flashbacks brief appearance so far by him. It's really mostly Jessica Biel, and more Jessica Biel, which is not a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
It just hasn't been expanded in any way that I found particularly compelling or gripping, and so I am not sure that I have all that much enthusiasm for watching more episodes when it premieres on Facebook Watch in October, but I would not call it bad, and people who are fans of the podcast may be interested to see the podcast only with Jessica Biel.
It's interesting that Jessica Biel is now in this part of her career where she's doing like really sort of dark and intense stuff, which I wouldn't have guessed before The Sinner. I wouldn't have even thought that was possible.
I think that she definitely understands the roles that people wanted to give her, and she's done a good job of trying to take control of her own career. So she's executive producing this. She, I believe, executive produced The Sinner as well in its first season. And, you know, she's trying to steer a version of her career, and I think that she's definitely not a bad actress, and one would not necessarily have ever known that from anything that Hollywood gave her when basically, you know, she was being treated as a body for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that has to be horribly frustrating. I can only imagine that if one's career were that, one would attempt to, if one had brains, steer one's career in a different direction. And so I think she's showing she has a good sensibility. I'm not sure this works, but the podcast is fairly popular, I'm told, and maybe that will draw an audience and will actually give Facebook Watch a show that people discuss, because maybe that would have a ripple effect.
I think that what Jessica Biel is doing is smart, you know, Dan, and taking control of her career, because I really thought she was terrific in The Sinner. I thought she was real. I mean, I was surprised I guess that's really, you know, a testament to how Hollywood, like you said, has treated her and cast her, because, you know, when I heard Jessica Biel was going to be in this thing called The Sinner, and when I heard what it was about, I was like, what? And then I thought she was terrific in it.
No, I think she clearly has a solid head on her shoulders, whether, you know, I thought her performance in The Sinner was great in a certain limited vein. I mean, it was totally believably intense and harrowing. I don't know that it's the kind of performance that you could give 15 times.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I'd ever seen anything previously from her that suggested what her wide range was. But no, she's a good screen presence, and not just because she's attractive. She does convey a certain intelligence and intensity on screen, and good for her trying to find an avenue to show it off. And also, you know, it's one of it's a good thing about our 1 billion channel television universe and 500 plus scripted original shows is it should give lots of people opportunities they wouldn't have gotten in other worlds.
Got it. Another one that you reviewed for TIFF, but this one doesn't start until the beginning of 2020. That's Briar Patch, but one of my favorite people is involved in that. That's Rosario Dawson.
Speaking of people who have not always been given nearly as much opportunity by Hollywood to do things, she's definitely been given, I would say, significantly more opportunity, but I think she also just may have more range than Jessica Biel does, especially for anyone who watched Jane the Virgin knows that she's also very, very funny and comedically light on her feet in a romantic comedy setting. So, Briar Patch, speaking of Sam Esmail directing Homecoming, he is executive producer on this, but he is not the creator or writer or director. It was created by Andy Greenwalt, who some people will know from being a TV critic, but also working on Legion season one or two, I think two. So, yes, people know him from podcasting and television writing, and it is based on a Ross Thomas novel, and it's a pulpy little concoction about a woman who is an investigator for a Senate committee, whatever that means, who returns to her hometown in Texas after her sister, who was a detective, is murdered, and she tries to investigate that while also investigating a separate thing involving a childhood flame who has become a gun runner, played by J.R. Ferguson from Mad Men and other various things, including the Outsiders television show. And it's okay. It's a show that's not quite sure what it wants to be. There are sort of elements of surrealism. The show is set in a city in which there was a recent breakout at the local zoo. So wild animals are wandering the streets. And, oh, look, there's a giraffe. Oh, look, there's a tiger in the hallway of the hotel. And it's good for imagery, and obviously it produces certain good moments, but I don't know that it's necessarily sold all that well. And the main investigation involving her sister, at least thus far, is not the least bit interesting, but I think Rosario Dawson is good. I think J.R. Ferguson is fantastic. I think he is just a lot of fun here. He's a character actor who, I mean, definitely Mad Men fans will know him. He was Stan. He flirted a lot with Peggy. He was very good. But he's excellent here, and to me, he's kind of working at a tone and volume that a lot of the rest of the show could probably stand to emulate. He's having fun, and I don't know how much fun the rest of the show is having. So it either needs to be significantly more fun and more pulpy, or significantly stranger and more arty. I don't know which one it needs to be, but currently it's in a nether region between them and not quite there, I don't think. But I've seen two episodes, and that sucker ain't premiering until early 2020, right. So way off.
Okay. All right. That's called Briar Patch. Look for that in a few months. So
exactly.
There you go. All right. So what about this show, Undone? I've seen a lot of the commercials for it. It's on Amazon. What is it looks intriguing. Tell everybody about Undone.
You want to check Undone out. You definitely want to check Undone out, because it is been... say this periodically, but it's more true here than in many things. It is like no other show on TV. It is created by Kate Purdy and Raphael Bob Waxberg, who both worked together on BoJack Horseman, which of course is a favorite.
Yes.
And it is it's very hard to describe. On an animation level, it is the first entirely rotoscoped regular television show in TV history, apparently. Other shows have had rotoscoped elements, but this is apparently in some ways unique, and it is the same rotoscoping house that did the Texas Bell Tower Shooter documentary a couple of years ago, which was really interestingly done.
Did they work on the Linkletter movies?
Yes, they worked on Scanner Darkly.
Yeah. So, oh, great. Okay.
So you know kind of what their style is, but it's also blended with a Dutch animator, Hisco Halsing, who likes to work with a combination of oil paints and other things. So it's a blending of styles, and the first episode is largely just this family in San Antonio, and their life, but then towards the end of the first episode, there's a car accident, and the main character, who's played by Rosa Salazar, who some people will know from Alita Battle Angel, other people will know from season 3 of Man Seeking Woman, some people will know her from Parenthood, etc., etc., she finds herself to some degree unstuck in time, in a Slaughterhouse-Five way, or in a who knows what kind of way, because her father, who has been dead for 20 years and is played by Bob Odenkirk, comes and tells her she has the ability to control time and maybe she can help solve his murder. And so can she do that, or is she just in a coma after an accident, or does she have some sort of mental illness because she comes from a family with a history of schizophrenia? It's all unclear, but the rotoscoping goes from kind of an interesting overlay over reality to twisting, warping, and playing with reality. There's an element of Groundhog Day to it, and it's really hard to describe. I'm certain I'm not doing it justice. Sometimes it's a little funny because the characters in it are wry and funny and aware of the strangeness of the circumstance.
Yeah.
But I would say it's not a comedy. It's a strange, loopy show. Sometimes it's very emotionally effective. It's always gorgeous to look at. And it's just different. And I appreciate it very much how totally different it felt.
Okay. So that's Undone. Is it streaming now on Amazon?
It is now streaming on Amazon, and it's only 8 episodes, and they're all fairly short. They're all in the 22, 23-minute range.
Oh, okay. So, you can get that one done quick.
Easy to binge.
Okay. All right.
Exactly.
Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, when we come back, we got the news coming up next, and then after the news, we're going to dive into the Emmys. The Emmys are handed out on Sunday night, and so we're going to talk about that right after we break here for the news on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here at WGN, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. 50 years of Scooby-Doo. We're going to celebrate that. Talk about some facts about Scooby-Doo, some of the weirdest Scooby-Doo guests, and then we're going to dive into the world of the greatest TV cartoon shows and on some of our Saturday morning memories. All right. We are talking with Dan Feinberg. It is that time of the month. Every couple of weeks, we talk to Dan. He's TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And this weekend is big because the Primetime Emmy Awards will be handed out. And we want to go through some of the big categories and see what Dan thinks. Dan, welcome back.
Well, thank you.
All right. But first of all, by the way, the Hollywood Reporter and your colleague who is not related to you, Scott Feinberg.
Indeed. FBI, not FIE.
Yes. He was told to by an anonymous person what they actually thought about their Emmy ballot. I thought this was hilarious. what did you think of this?
I think that Scott's brutally honest Emmy ballots are fantastic, both because they are indeed often brutally honest, but also they give an insight into the cluttered mind of an Emmy voter that I find terrifying, given that we're going to have to actually pay attention and take seriously these awards on Sunday night. So when his brutally honest Emmy voter talks about how he can't vote for Pose because he didn't watch Pose, but he knows he doesn't like Pose because every Ryan Murphy show is pretentious, all I can do is go, okay, yeah, you're just, great.
Yeah, right.
But on the other hand, he was also very ticked off that episodes of Black Mirror keep counting as TV movies, and he and I are right there together because episodes of Twilight Zone, the CBS All Access thing didn't count as TV movies. They were all treated as episodes of an anthology drama series,
right.
And that's what Black Mirror is as well. So stop gaming the system on that one, Netflix. Right. Darn it.
Well, this is really great. You know, I know that Entertainment Weekly does a similar kind of thing every year, right around the Oscars, where they anonymously ask people what they are voting for and what they're thinking. And I always find it kind of fascinating when I read those things. And then, of course, you try to figure out who it is, because they tell you what the person's job in Hollywood is. And then you're like, man, I wonder who said that.
No, there is always a guessing game aspect to play, where you start reading it and you're going, okay, so clearly that means the person is old, because they're referencing the ages of their kids, and they're referencing that they worked with this person 20 years ago. Okay, so I can maybe figure, yeah, it is definitely a guessing game. More than anything, these make me feel sad, but they make me feel interested and sad. So both of those things.
Okay. All right. Anyway, if you want to give that a read, it's up at Hollywood Reporter. It is the Brutally Honest Emmy Ballot. So you should check that out at the Hollywood Reporter. All right. The Emmy nominations, we've discussed them in the past. Do you have any sort of predictions, like in the best comedy category? I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of people are thinking it's Veep because it's the final season and they want to award it. But Barry has been on a roll lately in terms of awards and things like that. Where are you going? Where's your head at this, and what you think is going to win?
It's so hard to tell, because the early last weekend were the Creative Arts Emmys, and there were a couple fairly big awards that went to Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and it's funny, because we've almost kind of erased that one from our memory, and yet it won last year, so that ought to make it a favorite, and yet I think we're still kind of pretending as if Veep has this in the bag. And then there's always the part of me that goes, but if people actually watched six episodes of Fleabag, surely it would win.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you go and you look at the Brutally Honest Emmy ballot, and that guy voted for Barry, whoever
right.
he was. And I can understand that as a decision. I don't think that Schitt's Creek is going to win. So,
yeah.
And I don't think The Good Place is going to win, which makes me a little sad. It should be more in the conversation.
I agree.
I don't know. And I'm in. This one really intrigues me, because on the drama series, when we get there in a second, I can't think of a circumstance in which Game of Thrones doesn't
win. Of course.
I just can't. I would love for something else to win, because something else deserves to win. But it's going to be Game of Thrones. But comedy, I can see Fleabag winning. I can see Barry winning. I can see Marvelous Mrs. Maisel winning. I can see Veep winning. Any one of those could win.
Right. That's always a lot of fun when you're going into awards shows and you don't know. Like, it could be anybody. That's my favorite. Like, when the Oscars, you know, every year, you know, I watch the Oscars, obviously. And when it's completely obvious as to who the winners are going to be in every category, it's not nearly as much fun as when you kind of have no idea. And that's always more fun.
And with the Oscars, because they're kind of the culmination of that basically 3 month award juggernaut period, where every critics group gives an award and the Golden Globes and SAG, you know, you kind of know what has won all the precursor awards. The Emmys
yeah.
don't have that quite as much, and that makes them generally a little bit more fun, but they've been less fun because of how dominant Veep and Game of Thrones have been in recent years.
Right.
So let's see. Honestly, if you ask me to guess, I would still guess it's going to be Veep.
Yeah.
Because when in doubt, my instinct with Emmy voters is always to go with complacency.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, you know.
Limited series. I'm rooting for Fosse Verdon, but does it seem like it's going to be Chernobyl because of the timing of its broadcast?
I think Chernobyl and When They See Us, it'll be one of the two of them. I think that Chernobyl has a lot of support. I think that When They See Us also has a lot of support. I think that there probably is more political urgency behind When They See Us. I think it is more of a statement award,
right,
than Chernobyl would be. I think it's possible that maybe if you line them up side to side, maybe Chernobyl has more quote unquote affection, as much affection as you can have
right.
for a miniseries of people with body parts falling off of them because of
right.
radioactivity. But
right.
I think that When They See Us might have the, you know, just the, it's the nutritious and right thing to do. And yet I've also talked to people who said that they watched an episode or two of When They See Us and they were just so angry and outraged and pissed off, which is exactly what the miniseries is supposed to make
right,
you do,
right.
But they just couldn't finish it. So I've heard that reaction a lot also. And so I don't know, but I think it's going to be one of the two of those. I think if any of the other three win, it would be a pretty major
okay.
surprise.
Best actress in a comedy, it's going to be Julie Louis-Dreyfus. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind that she's going to win it.
God, look, what I need Phoebe Waller-Bridge to win something. So the question of what she is going to win, it is entirely, I think, up to the Emmy voters. I mean, it is anyway, because
yeah.
I have no say in this.
Right.
I need her to win something. And if she doesn't win for writing, series, or acting, I'm going to come away so angry at the end of Emmy night. So as long as they give her something, I'm not going to stress out about the things she doesn't win.
Yeah.
And so this is the one where it's easiest to not stress out, because if they just give it to Julie Louis-Dreyfus, she's Julie Louis-Dreyfus, as we always say, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and you know what? The thing is, like, she's won so many Emmys, and normally when someone wins all 9 million awards, it usually annoys me. But in the case of Julie Louis-Dreyfus, it doesn't bother me at all, because she's unbelievable. She was unbelievable on Veep. And of course, obviously, her personal story is going to weigh in on, she beat cancer, and that's going to, you know, make it maybe the emotional, you know, moment of the night.
I suspect she would be good for a standing ovation if she wins. It's just there really are other remarkable performances there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that I say I need Phoebe Waller-Bridge to win something, just as much I could say I need Natasha Lyonne to win
yeah.
something, because
yeah.
she's also nominated for everything for Russian Doll. And I think it's much more possible that she could end the night with nothing. And so that makes me a little sad. This is one of those circumstances where I'm hoping there's a calculated thought process to spreading the wealth a little bit, but that just never works out, unfortunately.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Best actor in a comedy. We're running a little short on time, but you thinking Bill Hader's going to get it again?
I am figuring Bill Hader, yes.
Yeah. Well, it was a great season, and he was fantastic on it.
For sure.
Yeah. Actress in a drama. I mean, are they going to go with Game of Thrones on this?
Weird category. I think it's probably Sandra Oh, because she didn't get the Emmy last year, and it was the only thing she didn't get last year in the
yeah.
award cycle. So
yeah.
I think they kind of feel like they owe her.
Okay. Best actor, what are we thinking? Sterling K. Brown, maybe?
Jason Bateman won the SAG Award, and that ticked me off then. he could totally win, because they just want to mess with me.
Right, they're all after you, man. That's all there is.
It's about me. Let's not pretend
yeah.
it's about anything else.
I agree. So, in just a couple of other quick ones here, this best actress in a limited series or TV movie category is stacked. I mean, it's crazy, and that's one that I have no idea. I mean, really, you could flip a coin at this point, because the performances are all really great, and they're all, you know, people who voters like.
It will be either Patricia Arquette or Michelle Williams. I feel as if the momentum might be in favor of Michelle Williams, just because it's been so long since Patricia Arquette
yeah.
won the thing she won for it. But again, as long as basically in that category, Amy Adams, Patricia Arquette, Michelle Williams, or Joey King would all be deserving winners. And Anjanou Ellis and Niecy Nash are both great. They're just in the wrong category.
Right. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. All right, well, we are going to watch it, and it is hostless this year.
So it is.
Yeah.
We'll see how that works. It was okay with the Oscars, so there's no reason why it shouldn't be okay with the Emmys too.
Yeah. No, it worked with the Oscars. It was fine. It was fine. It seemed to move faster, like the pacing of the show. It didn't seem as long or as poorly paced as some Oscar shows in the past. So there's that.
So. we'll see if that was dumb luck or the actual function of not having a host. We'll see. I'm not dreading a hostless telecast, but we'll see.
Okay. And then can you join us next week
I believe that we are going to have conversations, and hopefully I'll be able to come on next week to talk about the hopefully joyful and hopefully not Jason Bateman winning. Yeah, it seems like we should be able to do that.
We'll do that Tuesday. We'll do that Tuesday morning. We'll give it a day to settle down. Okay, Dan?
for the rage to mellow a little bit.
Exactly. You know what I'm telling you? I will immediately think of you if Jason Bateman, his name is announced. I'll just be trying
you'll be able to hear me sighing from Los Angeles, Nick. I promise you.
All right. Well, Dan, we'll look forward to talking to you on Tuesday and getting all your thoughts on the broadcast and on the winners and losers as well. Always a pleasure, Dan. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Looking forward to it, Nick.
All right, great. Dan Feinberg, he's the best. He'll be joining us Tuesday morning after the Emmys, this coming Tuesday morning, and we'll go through the whole thing, man. We'll analyze the broadcast. We'll talk about the winners, the losers, the snubs, the surprises, all of that fun stuff as the Emmys are handed out on Sunday night. Dan Feinberg is great. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, we'll take a break here on 720 WGN.